So the first week, coming together and settling, the circumstances are not always as settled as one would wish, with fire alarms going off and COVID procedures creating a bit of a ripple, and how to, it's okay. Let that pass through. Don't pick up the sign. The sign of anxiety, the sign of crisis, the sign of kind of alarms that agitate the system. So we hear, we notice, we keep the heart steady. Recognizing that, you know, even in a situation like this, circumstances are unpredictable. One can very well bear in mind that for the practicing the time of the Buddha, they didn't have, you know, secluded meditation halls with steady warmth and so forth. You're in a noisy jungle, insects, animals, food, precarious, you know, circumstances indeed not settled at all. Yeah. And the Buddha himself saying during his practice time, walking in the forest at night time, said, when the fear and dread arose in the mind, I kept walking backwards and forwards. The fear and the dread arose in my mind. I kept walking backwards and forwards. Till that process of walking backwards and forwards subdued the fear and the dread in my mind. Yeah, very, very simple, but earthy human experience. Yeah. Using the body's energy, simple, steady rhythm of body moving. Yeah. Whereas fear and dread, we tend to freeze up, lock, fluster, agitate, scramble, think a lot, you know, walk up and down, till that sign, the sign of fear and dread, abates. Like claws of it loosen around the heart. Bearing in mind, of course, that our life is precarious, subject to accident, aging, sickness, death, any particular time. And liberation of the heart is the priority, the possibility while this life span pertains, or we have this opportunity in this sensory condition to understand that the signs, the grasp, grab the heart, clutch it, pierce it, crush it, yeah, and the signs that help to lift it. What are these signs? Nimitta. That word, nimitta, which has become kind of made more esoteric, specialized, applied to subtle micro-phenomena that can be conduced in the mind. This is in the way the Buddha used the word nimitta. The sign that holds the heart with dread, anxiety, aversion, compassion. The sign of impermanence, this will change, this will pass. These are the signs. When we return to the sutta, you're looking for nimittas, and Sariputta says, well, greed is a nimitta, hatred's a nimitta, delusion's a nimitta. They're not that subtle, but these are the ones that grab yeah, and we don't necessarily see them because the reflex of the citta is so fast that immediately the scenarios rise up, the reactions rise up. We're avoiding it, pushing it away, reacting to it, spinning out into something else. When the citta is touched by a sign, it moves so fast. The Buddha says, I can't even find a metaphor, a simile to tell you how fast it goes. It's just beyond belief how quick that reaction is. But you can begin to recognize it. Yeah. You know, because as it retains, when the sound arises, it retains an impression. The citta feels contracted, defensive, something to feel upset about, something to long for, something to feel inadequate about, something to feel one's missed, one's failed, one can't do it. These impressions arise and they become myself, or part of myself. They become the word I'm using, my landscape, my territory. And this is the telltale sign. You realize that same territory, you're walking across it. Different place, different people, same territory. Interesting, how's that happening? So people who don't cultivate really believe their reactions to be actual messages of truth. We understand our reactions to be messages of the citta and need to be handled carefully. And this means sati sampajana, mindfulness and full direct knowingness, pausing, lingering over the qualities, the signs, as the sign that affects the mind, finds that affects the heart. In this sense, we're quite supported by bodily experience, because a sign has strong effects, you can feel it in your body. Unfortunately, the response mostly is when we feel these things is to go into our minds, to lose the body and go into the mind, how I'm going to deal with it, and where did it come from, and whose fault is it, or what do I need to do to not be this, so I could be something else? Why is it going wrong? What more should there be? Have I missed something? It goes into these doubt programs, and in there we spin around and lose balance and composure and present, direct stability and knowing. And so we have to use this sati sampajana in the right way. And similarly of the cook, when the Buddha talks about the unskillful cook who prepares a meal for the king, doesn't notice what the king likes and dislikes, serves the same food the next day, still doesn't notice what the king likes or dislikes, serves the same food the next day, still doesn't notice, then gets the sack, gets fired. Whereas a skillful one takes note of what the king likes or dislikes, next day they present more of what the king likes, they get promoted. Simple analogy. And he says, this is when someone who has full mindfulness and sampajana, but does not pick up the sign of the mind. They're so busy practicing their meditation, they don't actually pick up the sign of the mind, because we've got a meditation program running. Do this, do that, do the other. We're not, hey. Very common for human behavior to seek a program, to get that kind of thing going. We seek patterns and programs. And so then I know what to do. Actually, a skillful meditator never knows what to do. apart from to attend to the sign of the mind. And using very simple, okay, there is a body here, I know that. It stands, it sits, it reclines, I know that. I know physical pain, discomfort, I know that. You know, there is breathing in and out, yeah. There is some kind of awareness, yeah. Let's just put it somewhere, see what happens. See what happens. Start reading it. Now, so this Yonisomanasikara, careful attention, is just, you know, actually formulating, okay, don't bother with this, don't bother with that, just find a simple form that's good enough to start with. Now listen in. You're going to pick up the signals within there. Some of these be memories, thoughts, of course. Yeah. And probably what arises is, I don't want this. I like something else. What should I do? So, to not have this and have something else instead. And then it starts. And we can get into the details. But actually, Dhamma Vijaya, which is another inquiring sign, an inquiring process, skill of it is to attend to the signs, to actually what is mind is being affected by, how it's being affected, to pick up the sankharas, the movement. So we're coming to practicing with citta, you want to look for movement, intonation, tones, surges, resistances, stiffening, scrambling, fragmenting. Yeah, it's trying to escape these sankhara movements because these are the ones that create the formations that become my pattern, my program, my landscape, my territory, myself. In a monastery, the monastery I've been living at for a number of years, Cittaviveka, we have an area of forest land, rather like this. Lots of trees, hills, slopes, river, stream running in the middle of it with a pond. And naturally, when you've got a river, you've got the banks rise quite steeply. There's quite a steep rising out of this river area, stream area, to something like a hilltop rises up, and trees all over it. So we just see it as that. Now, in the middle of the 20th century, they discovered aerial photography, where they could fly over the land 100 feet up, 150 feet up, and photograph the land. And when they flew over this, they photographed it, and hey, these regular patterns. There's obviously, they could make out the ridges, the mounds, and the ditches of an Iron Age fort, 500 BCE, so before the time of the Buddha, which you couldn't see if you're on the ground. What you see is trees and leaves and rabbits. Yeah. You don't see an Iron Age fort. What are you talking about? I don't see any fort, I don't see any iron, I don't see it's forest. I see rabbits, I see holes in the ground, I see tree stumps, I see an Iron Age fort. Yeah. take again a plane, you can see it. You can see the pattern. Very distinctive, obvious, man-made pattern. Knowing that, going descending to the ground, you can see, oh yes, that is a ditch. Oh yes, that is a mound. I see it now. And then you can see it and walk around in it. But all these hundreds of years, nobody saw it. Well, it's hundreds of years since 500 BC up to 1950 or so, nobody saw it. Everybody could walk around and see the trees, nobody saw the fort. Because they were too much into it to see it, too close to it to see it. You didn't see the sign. We just saw with our eyes the immediate, we didn't see the sign, the overall pattern. Use this as an analogy for how you understand your heart. You know, we can get the images, the pictures, the stories, the narratives, the personal profiles, the descriptions of self and other, and what we should be, what we might be, and so forth. But you lift the big picture, the overall picture, and you see something, is real something else. And generally, what seems to me comes up quite a sign that arises is what I am the experience of not wanting this experience and wanting to have another experience. I am an experience that doesn't want to have this experience. It would sooner have another one, or a bit longer, or a bit sweeter, or smoother, or something like that. This one isn't quite right. Yeah. That's the experience. And around that basic pattern, the craving starts going, and the resistances start building up, and the doubt, or the complaining, or the hankering, or the fantasizing starts moving, the sankhara starts swelling up from that. We're acknowledging this, acknowledging that sign, dukkha. Acknowledging it, ignorance dispelled. When ignorance is dispelled, around that sign, then instead of the movements of something else, how to deal with this, why is it like this, could it be something like that, whose fault is it, why am I never quite making it, when can I get the good bit, instead of all that starting to move, there's just in the quelling of the sankhara, diminution, thinning of obscuration, remove the sankhara, you begin to recognize the upadi, the substrate, that is the foundational sense of I want to be something. Yeah. The perceptions, the formations, the dispassion, not moving, not straining, not moving forward, not straining, just floating on that. The tide of that particular sign moves through, abates. One is open, unknown, mysterious, no boundaries. So it's worthwhile getting in touch with the very primary movements. And the deeper you go, the simpler it gets, though it's not always so easy to get deep. You have to linger and keep that Dhamma inquiry. What is the foundation of this? What is the root quality around this experience. I don't want it. This is called vibhava. Vibhava, I don't want it. Or the opposite, I want more of this. Bhava. I want more of this rather agreeable, soothing, calming experience. I want more of it. And both of these will definitely generate stress and suffering, because what we recognize, of course, with the enjoyable is it changes. The things we don't enjoy tend to lock, kind of get trapped in them. So just to float, to recognize that is possible. Most of our life is based upon going forwards or going back, or shifting or changing or directing, managing. What's it like to float? Trying to introduce that even in standing meditation, where you don't seem to be floating, because your body is very strongly connected to the ground. You're not, you know, going dizzy or spinning off. But in that balance that can arise when one is standing, the quality of balance lingered upon, sensed, made much of, that sign of balance, of openness, the heart dwelling in that, the body feels really light. Because one is not giving attention to the sign of the heaviness or the boniness or the fleshiness or whatever. Remember, the citta doesn't actually experience the sensory world directly, it experiences messages from it. This message is delivered by mano-vijnana or by other forms of consciousness. Bodily consciousness, mind consciousness, delivers the message. Yeah. And then the citta then reacts to that message. So we get the message of physical pain from the body. The citta tightens up and how, what to do about it, how to resist it, how to cut it off, how to somehow defend itself from it. This already is a tough practice to not defend, to actually widen one's awareness over the painful area to include the space around, the energies moving through. If it's in your leg, you expand your awareness to include your back, your fingertips, your feet, and so on. Breathing, energy flowing through. It doesn't necessarily make the physical pain go away, but it may reduce substantially the intensity with which you experience it. The intensity of being gripped by it, till it becomes something like something in the background, you know, which we learn to live with, like we learn to live with traffic noise in the background. So one becomes more dispassionate to it. The less it actually grips the heart can then, in that turn, towards signs that support and enrich it, such as the sign of balance, cool, light, open, still, but sensitive. The signs of goodwill, contemplating bringing up these qualities, so the citta picks up, you know, I have been protected, you know, I have experienced joy, I have experienced gratitude, skillful states have arisen, I have acted upon those. So dwelling in these, physical stuff tends to recede into the background. We pick up the sign of the breathing as a vitality freely given, unerringly freely given, whether your respiration track is long or short, erratic or whatever, you breathe. In fact, you don't even do it, it happens to you. When you sense it as this tidal vitality moving through your system, through all of the body, chances are your attention span becomes more restful, receptive, less proactive. The restfulness, the openness, the restfulness of attention, receptivity, has a quality to it. It feels easeful, comfortable, relaxed, yet it's not sleepy. Then we find this is what's called sapaya. Sapaya, comfortable. When we cultivate practice, it's supposed to be sapaya, that which is manageable, suitable for our condition, our temperament, our physicality, our disposition. It's a very generous and free offer. Just make yourself sapaya. Do what seems suitable to you, which is within the measure of your body. Yeah. At this particular time, which you can manage. And you get a sense of not trying to be an Olympic meditator or, you know, feeling you've got to keep up with what everybody else is doing or be better than everybody else. You know, I'm the star pupil. Even if, you know, even if you are. Like, there's no winners in this process. There's no winners. there's release, but there's no winners and no losers. It's just release from these measurements. So you tune into what's sapaya. This is one of the supports for proper sampajana, so proper awareness, proper directed sensitivity. Yeah. So there's experience happening. Do I resist it? Probably it's unpleasant, I must admit. The first response is to resist it. If I'm wise, if I'm modest, if I'm just being straightforward, I don't like the unpleasant. That's why it's called unpleasant. You know, it's so utterly simple, isn't it? So what do you think? If it's unpleasant, what do you think your response will be? Your reaction will be, however noble you are, your reaction will be, no, no. Then what's going to happen? Get out. What's this about? I don't understand it. How could I check? Why should it be like this? Is everybody get this? I don't know. Is there something wrong with me? Is it supposed to be this way? It wasn't like this last year. Perhaps I'm going strange. I don't know. Yeah. Well, it kind of goes up to the head. Head doesn't know, so it just comes up with a whole proliferation of possible answers. This means you've got da 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 da. I don't know if you ever look in those, websites are talking about illnesses, and you think, you read this description of the illness, and you think, I got that. Then you go to the next one, I got that too, because everyone, yes, I get those sweats, yes, I get sweats, and I get trembles, yeah, that's me, oh my goodness, I got this 15-letter word thing going wrong with me, and a fatality rate, oh, no, dead. Actually, I feel okay. That's because you're hiding it, suppressing it. Yeah, but all I've got is feeling okay, and I'll deal with the rest of it when it happens, but I'm okay, you know. I'm okay. And that sign is important to acknowledge. Yeah, you know, this, that. But something that says, yeah, but okay. So your thinking mind just doesn't go into these proliferations of what's going to happen, what should be or could be. Because what does that do? What's the energy of that? It runs around, jangling. What's the energy of remembering all the unpleasant things people did to you? And all the unpleasant things you did to other people. Oh dear. Well, what's the value of it to recognize more vigilance, more attention? How did that happen? I was reactive is how it happened. So let's get that pause moment going. that moment, that pause moment, that 10-second pause, just wait. Till you get the heart picks up the signal. Unpleasant feeling. My mind is scrambling. Unpleasant feeling. Okay, well let's just pause a little longer. Then my mind is not scrambling. My mind is acknowledging unpleasant feeling. Let's wait a little longer. Linger on that. Resistance to unpleasant feeling is starting to dwindle. The intensity of the unpleasant feeling is beginning to lessen. The people who created that unpleasant feeling for me have disappeared. Me as the victim has evaporated. That's gone. Gone kind of quiet here. It's kind of still here. It's quiet. Oh, pick up the sign. Sign of quiet. The sign of the settled. Dwell in that. Make much of that. Linger in that. Heart begins to know itself as distinct from the sankharas that wash over and grip it and shape it and pattern it. And with some experience, you begin to, you've got that as a reference point. It gives you more ability to discern the shape. Shaping your heart's getting into it. It's going into fragments. It's going into iron resistance. It's going into jelly, soggy jelly heap. Yeah, what it's doing. Scrambling, frantic, pick up the sign. What's needed? Pause, linger. What's needed? That sympathetic awareness. So we're exploring, not like a surgeon dissecting anatomy on a slab, but as a careful masseur might gently move around a tight area, what's needed here? What's needed here? And sometimes just touching it is all that's needed without pushing it, pressing it, just touching it. So it knows there's sensitivity here, there's a sympathetic awareness here. Maybe that's it. But this is Dhamma Vijaya, exploration, and exploration means you don't really know. That's what makes it interesting. But you can sense these, you get closer and closer to the territory, the real territory, through getting less and less into the external details, the narrative, the history, the people, the personality, you lift from that, and strange enough, that lifting from it brings into relief the underlying quality of the territory. Yeah, like the aerial photography. You're studying the leaves, studying the rabbit holes, studying the tree stumps, you won't see the fort. You lift, looking at the same territory, not self, not getting into the histories, just when you see, begin to see the signs. This is the sign, the ill will. Whose it is, I don't know, but it's a kind of bitterness or intensity or negativity. We can't say, is it mine or hers or theirs, where it came from. We just notice this quality of something is quite, you know, contracted and sour and hard. You know, and what does it need? And before we even say what it needs, which I imagine the thought does immediately pop up, put some metta on it, maybe just say, be sympathetic and let it take what it needs. You know, just be there, open-handed. Let it take what it needs. It's a bit of a subtle shift from the, you know, people think you need to have this, you need to have that, you need one of these, you need one of those. Just pause. It'll take what it needs if you present that sympathy. That's what makes it interesting, and that's what makes it mysterious, and that's what makes it not self. The process will heal itself if the territory is exposed and the sympathetic awareness hovers over that. What else can we really trust? Because there's no manipulation in that. There's no, I've got to make something in that. There's no winning in that. It's just that response. To bring that response into the world, into your world, as you live it. This is the furtherance, whereby the landscape begins to ease. And we see life rather differently. So instead of me being the experience of wanting to have an experience of some kind, there's just the experience and response. The abating of passion, destruction of craving, the draining of the accumulations, cessation, Nibbana, that's the opening. That's the opening. So let's take some time for direct practice. If you look at it again, very simply speaking, the sign, the standing, if you're standing meditation, the sign I would suggest you tune into is the sign of balance. It's very good for that quality, that sign. Yeah. If you're walking, it's a sign of fluidity flowing through. Not rushing, not pressurized, open, flowing through. That sign is beautiful. If you're sitting, it's a sign of the tree, grounded, firm base. Yeah. Feeling breath flowing through you. These are skillful signs that these positions offer by themselves. If you're reclining is very open. It's the most vulnerable position. You're open. And focus on that. If you're lying on your side or your back, sensing, you know, you have a span covering you like a rainbow, like an arc. And you're living under that, open to whatever, to that space, relaxing, deeply relaxing the boundaries, the armoring, the strapping that we hold ourselves in. It's a very trusting kind of mudra, reclining mudra. But, you know, for that, you do require that firm center line in order to sustain the mudra, the gesture. Otherwise it tends to slide. So let's cultivate directly for ourselves.